I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Is Democracy Now!
We are slowly dying every day. Is there anyone on this planet who can live what a human is living in Gaza? I don't think anyone can bear what we are bearing.
At least 115 people in Gaza have died of starvation amidst the ongoing Israeli blockade. We'll speak with Dr. Nick Maynard, just back from Gaza. His piece in The Guardian headlined, "I'm witnessing the deliberate starvation of Gaza's children. Why is the world letting it happen?" Then to the Mediterranean Sea, where another Freedom Flotilla aid boat has set sail in hopes of breaking the siege.
Israel is threatening to attack us. We are not the threat. The threat is a world where killing children is normalized, where starving civilians is accepted, where denying an entire people their human rights is justified, and those who act in the name of humanity are attacked, jailed, or killed.
We'll speak with Palestinian-American human rights lawyer Haweda Araf on board the boat. Then to Detroit, to the only Palestinian-American member of Congress, Rashida Tlaib.
This is not a game, Mr. Speaker. These are human beings. And if colleagues need to close their eyes again and pretend they're not Palestinians to care, then maybe they should. And we would stop this madness and stop supporting the genocide in Gaza.
And finally, civil rights attorney Ben Crump on the sentencing of a Louisville officer involved in the killing of Breonna Taylor, as well as a Jacksonville, Florida police stop of a black motorist, smashing his window and beating him to the ground. The death of an 18-year-old young woman in New York police custody. And as President Trump defies calls to release the Epstein files, but releases the files on Dr. Martin Luther King, what about the files on the assassination of Malcolm X? All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Malnutrition cases are soaring across the Gaza Strip, where starving children are pouring into overwhelmed hospitals. Earlier today, the Ahli Arab Hospital in Gaza City announced the death of a Palestinian child named Abdelkader Al-Fayoumi from malnutrition, the 115th starvation-related death since Israel reimposed its siege on Gaza in March. Israeli attacks across Gaza killed at least 62 Palestinians Thursday, 19 of them while they were trying to collect food from militarized aid sites run by the shadowy U.S.-Israeli-backed so-called Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, or GHF. On Thursday, displaced Palestinian women in Rafah were directed by GHF to a woman-only distribution section where they were attacked with tear gas and pepper spray.
The Americans said, go, go, so we went. Then they said, no, leave. After a while, they started spraying pepper spray on us. They burnt our faces and hands. We went outside, and they distanced us further away, so we went away. 5 minutes later, they started throwing tear gas. We were suffocating because of the gas. Then they called on the tank from a distance. They called on the microphone for the tank to come, and the quadcopter came, and everything was on us.
The UN Human Rights Office says over 1,000 Palestinians have been killed trying to access food since May, mostly near GHF sites. This comes as a U.S. military veteran who quit his job as a security contractor for GHF says he witnessed other guards using deadly violence against unarmed civilians. The guard requested to have his face blurred and his voice scrambled to remain anonymous. He described an attack by U.S. contractors on a starving Palestinian man who dropped to his hands and knees to pick up noodles that had fallen to the ground.
guy wasn't armed. He wasn't a threat. A refugee contractor sprayed an entire can of pepper spray, an entire can into this guy's face. That's lethal. I was standing next to these two women, and this contractor throws this stun grenade, and it lands in between me and them. This thing hit her, and she just drops, just lifeless collapsed to the ground. It looked like she had been killed. And to me, that was I could not be a part of that anymore.
The disguised contractor was speaking to Israel's Channel 12 TV. The former United Nations humanitarian affairs chief has condemned Israel's assault on Gaza as a genocide. In a wide-ranging interview with Middle East Eye, Martin Griffiths predicted, quote, "My grandchildren will be learning in school about who did what in the worst crime of the 20th century." Griffiths added, quote, "There's no prior experience in my 5 decades of humanitarian experience that can come close to the comparison to the horror we are all seeing in Gaza," he said. Meanwhile, Canadian Prime Minister Mark Carney called Israel's denial of aid to Palestinians a violation of international law and said Israel's control of aid distribution must be replaced by international organizations. Australian Prime Minister Anthony Albanese wrote in a statement, quote, "Israel's denial of aid and the killing of civilians, including children seeking access to water and food, cannot be defended or ignored." And French President Emmanuel Macron says France will formally recognize the state of Palestine during the UN General Assembly in September. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio strongly rejected what he called France's reckless decision that only serves Hamas propaganda, unquote. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu said France's recognition of Palestine, quote, rewards terrorists. We'll have more on Gaza after headlines with Dr. Nick Maynard, who just returned from volunteering at Nasser Hospital in Khan Yunis, south of Gaza City. We'll also speak with the only Palestinian-American member of Congress, Rashida Tlaib. Thailand's prime minister says border clashes with Cambodia could lead to war. Meanwhile, Cambodia is claiming Thailand's committing war crimes using cluster munitions and heavy weaponry inside its territory. The death toll has climbed to at least 16 people. On the second day of fighting, survivors say they had to flee attacks with nothing but the clothes on their backs.
We were looking after my mother at home, and we heard gunshots, bang, 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 booming loudly, and then continuous boom, boom sounds of explosion. I turned to my mother and said, "Oh my God, Mom." Then I quickly told her, "Mom, get in the car," and we rushed off. We got in the car so fast, we didn't bring anything with us.
An immigrant from Venezuela who was sent to El Salvador's mega prison SECOT by the Trump administration has filed a $1.3 million claim against the U.S. government over his wrongful detention. 27-year-old Narivar Adrian Leon Rengel was among the more than 250 Venezuelan immigrants flown to El Salvador from the U.S. in March as Trump invoked the Alien Enemies Act of 1798. They were released and returned to Venezuela in a surprise so-called prisoner swap with the U.S. Rengel was taken by federal agents from the parking lot of his apartment building in Irving, Texas, with immigration officials wrongfully claiming his tattoos proved he was affiliated with the Tren de Aragua gang. Rengel came to the U.S. in 2023 and worked as a barber. He described being brutally beaten by guards at SECOT. The Washington Post reports Immigration and Customs Enforcement has directed its agents to skyrocket the use of GPS ankle monitors, which advocates have long denounced as digital shackles. The move will sharply expand ICE's round-the-clock surveillance of some 180,000 immigrants under the so-called Alternatives to Detention program. Activists who've challenged the use of tech for immigration crackdowns say these programs amount to digital prisons and have warned of privacy violations and the mass collection of personal data by ICE. In related news, an Afghan interpreter who came to the United States after working with U.S. troops during the invasion of Afghanistan, was taken by masked federal agents this week after an appointment related to his green card application. The person was identified only as Zia. Zia and his family fled Afghanistan following the Taliban's return to power in 2021. They were granted humanitarian parole by the Biden administration in 2024. This comes as thousands of Afghans in the U.S. face deportation after a federal appeals court refused to postpone the Trump administration's move to end temporary protected status for Afghans. The termination went into effect July 21st. The Trump administration's issued new threats against U.S. permanent residents. This week, Customs and Border Protection warned people must carry their green cards and proof of immigration status or face criminal charges and fines if detained by federal law enforcement. On Capitol Hill, the Senate voted 50-48 Thursday to advance the nomination of Emil Bovee, bringing Donald Trump's former criminal defense attorney one step closer to a lifetime appointment on the Third Circuit Court of Appeals. Two Republicans, Lisa Murkowski and Susan Collins, sided with Democrats opposing his nomination. Bovee has been called an extreme ideologue and has reportedly directed Justice Department lawyers to ignore judicial orders that undermine Trump's agenda. Meanwhile, Supreme Court Justice Elena Kagan said Thursday the independence of federal courts is under attack due to increasing threats of violence against judges and the refusal of Trump administration officials to follow court rulings. Justice Kagan spoke at a judicial conference in California.
This idea that litigants, and most especially I'm talking about government officials, needn't obey the dictates of courts, needn't obey court orders. And you know, that's just not the way our system works, not the way rule of law in this country works. And that's true for the Supreme Court, and it's also true for every district court.
President Trump has signed a rescission bill clawing back $9 billion that had been previously approved for foreign aid and public broadcasting. Just over $1 billion was slated for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, which funds NPR and PBS. The rest of the money was destined for foreign assistance programs. Amid the cuts to USAID, Doctors Without Borders slammed President Trump's plan to destroy nearly $10 million worth of contraceptives that were set to be delivered overseas. In a statement, the organization decried the, quote, callous waste that puts the health and lives of women and girls at risk. Meanwhile, public broadcaster GBH said Tuesday it's laying off staffers who produce the series American Experience and pausing the production of new documentaries. Stanley Nelson, the award-winning documentary filmmaker, said, quote, these cuts are especially devastating considering the current state of affairs in this country, when the preservation and teaching of American history is more needed and more threatened than ever before, he said. And the Trump administration has cleared the way for an $8 billion merger between Paramount and Skydance. In approving the deal Thursday, the Trump-appointed chair of the FCC, Brendan Carr, said, quote, I welcome Skydance's commitment to make significant changes at the once-storied CBS broadcast network, unquote. The FCC's approval comes less than a month after CBS's owner Paramount agreed to pay Trump $16 million after he sued 60 Minutes over how it edited an interview with his opponent, Vice President Kamala Harris. And just a week ago, CBS canceled The Late Show with Stephen Colbert after Colbert called the settlement a big fat bribe. The show is supposed to go off the air next May. Meanwhile, the cartoon satire show South Park, which has just signed a $1.5 billion streaming deal with Paramount, skewered President Trump, showing him sleeping with the devil. The White House, in response, called the show fourth rate. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. Back in a minute.
maliba de minze un farando ja fana de jigidinyina na lae mumbe 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 mali jamana ke kembe Unite, 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 unite. I say unite, unite,
unite. By Fatoumata Diawara, performed in our Democracy Now! Studio. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In a closely watched decision, this week, a federal judge in Kentucky sentenced the former Louisville police officer who blindly fired 10 bullets into Breonna Taylor's home in 2020 during a botched raid. Brett Hankison was sentenced to 33 months in prison for using excessive force during the deadly no-knock police raid that killed Breonna Taylor in her own home. U.S. District Judge Rebecca Grady Jennings rejected the prosecutor's recommendation to have Brett Hankison sentenced to just one day in prison, calling the effort not appropriate. Some of the bullets he fired penetrated the walls of a neighbor's home where a family was sleeping. Taylor was a black 26-year-old emergency room technician whose killing sparked nationwide racial justice protests under the banner of Black Lives Matter. Louisville Metro Police arrested four protesters who blocked traffic outside the federal court where Hankison was sentenced on Monday. Among those arrested was Bianca Austin, Breonna Taylor's aunt. Taylor's former boyfriend and her mother responded to the sentencing.
I think the judge did the best she could with what she had to work with. There was no prosecution in there for us. There was no prosecution in there for Breonna.
That part.
So I definitely, you know, I'm grateful for the judge for giving some time because we could have walked away with nothing according to what they recommended.
I'm grateful for the small piece of justice that we got. It's definitely not what I was expecting. And Brett Hankison told me I was going to go to jail for the rest of my life. So I definitely feel some type of something to see him going for, even if it's a little time.
Breonna Taylor's boyfriend and mother. For more, we're joined by Ben Crump, civil rights attorney. We want to ask you about a number of cases from the reason you were here in New York, the wake and funeral of an 18-year-old young woman in police custody, the beating of and the smashing of the window of a black motorist in Jacksonville, Florida. But let's begin with the sentencing of Brett Hankison, the former Louisville police officer who shot into Breonna Taylor's home. Your response?
Well, Amy Goodman, I think Breonna's mother and boyfriend expressed it best when Tamika Palmer said there was no prosecution for Breonna in the courtroom. It was like a George Orwell Animal Farm courtroom scene where the prosecutor was really the defense lawyer for Brett Hankison. They were advocating harder for Brett Hankison to be exonerated than his defense lawyers were. And it was just mind-boggling. And so, like Breonna's mother, Tamika Palmer, said, there was nobody advocating for Breonna. I mean, they recommended he get one day in prison. And that was what he had served when he was arrested, Amy. So they essentially wanted him to get no jail time for a jury, an all-white jury, finding that he had committed a felony. And so, I mean, the judge, thank God for her, she even had to argue with the prosecutor that, you know, a violation of civil rights was a crime because they were trying to say, well, we don't even know if we ever would have prosecuted this case. You know, that was the last administration. The bullets didn't hit anybody. And she stopped him and she said, no, no. She said, civil rights violations are defined as crimes in America. They shot those 10 shots It was a violation of her Fourth Amendment rights. Breonna Taylor, while he was shooting at her front door, was not allowed to leave her premises. And that constitutes seizure, Fourth Amendment violation against an unlawful search and seizure. And so it was like unbelievable, Amy. And as her boyfriend, Kenny Walker, said, you know, at least he got some jail time, because they want him to get no jail time for killing this black woman.
Just to be clear, it was another officer named Miles Cosgrove who was determined to have fired the shot that killed Breonna. He was fired, but faced no legal consequences?
Yes, because the court determined that black people don't have a right to the Second Amendment, apparently. Because when Kenny Walker fired at who he thought was breaking into their apartment at 1 o'clock in the morning, who they didn't know who was coming through the door, because these no-knock warrants are inherently dangerous. And when he fired the shot back, a warning shot, letting the intruders know that he had a gun. And so Miles Cosgrove and the other officers started shooting, and the court determined that they were justified in self-defense. And so, I mean, it's almost as if they are telling black people, you all don't have a right to the Second Amendment.
This week in Florida, the Jacksonville Sheriff, T.K. Waters, said Monday none of the officers involved in the violent arrest and beating of a 22-year-old black motorist named William Anthony McNeil Jr. will face criminal charges. Video of the beating has since gone viral. Jacksonville Sheriff's Office deputies pulled McNeil over February 19th for driving without his headlights on, even though it was daytime and it wasn't even raining. Cell phone video from his dashboard shows McNeil posing no threat to officers as he's questioning why they're pulling him over. An officer then breaks McNeil's window and punches him in the face before officers drag him from the car, throw him to the ground, and begin pummeling him. Just a quick clip.
Exit the vehicle now. Exit the vehicle. Show me your hands.
Here.
I'm here. What is your reason, sir?
Step out.
What is your reason?
Step out now. All right.
McNeil says he suffered a chipped tooth that pierced his cheek, requiring stitches, a concussion, short-term memory loss. The Jacksonville NAACP called the video, said this troubling behavior from law enforcement highlights the very reasons why many African Americans, especially African American men, feel fear during traffic stops. Ben Crump, you're representing him. Can you talk about the video being released months after and what you're calling for?
Absolutely, Amy. First of all, you know, this lie that they were stopping him for driving without his headlights on, even though it was in the broad daylight and it wasn't inclement weather, is just a classic example of driving while black. Many people don't ever understand that they don't have to worry about that. But for many minorities in America, it is a constant threat for us, especially black people, this constant racial profiling. And I have articulated that what happened with William McNeil Jr. was a 21st century Rosa Parks moment, where black Americans just get so fed up with having our constitutional rights and our civil rights and our humanity constantly disrespected and ignored. And so William McNeil, once he heard the police say that I stopped you for not having your headlights on in broad daylight, he asked him, you stopped me for? And that was the response. And then he said, I want to talk to your supervisor. And because he dared ask, like any citizen have the right to do, Amy Goodman, for his supervisor. Then you see this brutal assault on him, not on his car, but his person. They get him out of the car. He's restrained. They punching him. They get him on the ground with handcuffs. Then they slam his head on the ground at least three times. Looked like it could have been many more. And there are four officers there, and nobody seems alarmed by this behavior. So you know it must be business as usual. And so he was afraid. And, you know, his family, after they arrested him and put him in jail for 2 days, took him to the hospital from the jail cell. And he just was afraid because his mom and dad said they don't want anything else to do with this. But thank God they finally got the courage to release this video months later. And everybody should have video cameras recorded when the police have these interactions with them, because they did not tell the truth on their police reports. When you look at the video, it is contradicting what they said on the police report.
I can't believe I'm asking you about yet another case, but here in New York, you were here this week. Family and community members gathered Tuesday for the wake to commemorate Sanaa Cheatham, an 18-year-old young Black woman from the Bronx who died in police custody earlier this month. City medical examiners ruled the teen's death a suicide, but her family continues to demand justice and answers in what led to her death after she was found hanging in a holding cell at the NYPD precinct in the Bronx on July 5th. Dr. Stephen Marshall, a National Action Network senior advisor, addressed the police during his remarks at her funeral.
Where the hell were you when Sanaa was actually begging for help? It is a disgrace. It is disgusting that this story has been told in a whisper.
Ben Crump, you're representing Sanaa's family. What are you calling for?
We're calling for transparency, and we're calling for accountability. When you're having a mental health crisis, you should have the appropriate responses. NYPD in that Bronx jail had a camera that was facing the jail cell of Sanaa Lake Cheatham the whole time. This 18-year-old teen was crying out for help. That's what you do when you're suicidal. And the video is going to be shocking once you it's released, because you have this little girl who they clearly, if they're watching the video, is having a mental health crisis. And she's telling them things, she's screaming, and nobody does anything. And you see, it reminds me of George Floyd when you say somebody certainly is going to intervene, somebody definitely going to come and do something, and nobody does anything. The fact that you're Black and you're having a mental health crisis should not equal a death sentence for you. So NYPD, you have to have this matter addressed. Where were you? Were you asleep at the wheel? Apparently, it seems you were.
Ben Crump, finally, in just 2 minutes, the Trump administration released over 240,000 pages of FBI records on Martin Luther King Jr., despite opposition from the King children, who said J. Edgar Hoover had a campaign against Dr. Martin Luther King. The Trump administration released this as so many calls were coming in for the release of the Epstein files. But you've been calling for, working with the Malcolm X family, the documents to be released in the assassination of the slain civil rights leader Malcolm X. Your thoughts, what you're demanding now.
Well, thank you so much, Amy, for acknowledging Malcolm X's family plight for justice 60 years later.